Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hello and welcome to In the News This Week, the podcast from some of the team behind Have I Got News For You, where we take you through our picks of the news this week when the TV show can't.
We'll be looking at both the serious and not so serious news items and trying to convince each other of which story we think would have been perfect for the show if it was on air.
Which it isn't. But let's introduce ourselves anyway. I'm Emerald Paston. I write on Have I Got News For You.
I'm Jack Harris, the sometimes producer of the show.
I'm Mike Raymond, sometimes series producer of the show.
And I'm Queenie Miller, the picture researcher for the show, which is obviously essential for a podcast.
Absolutely key.
Hello.
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 Hello, hello.
It's in the script that I have to ask, how are we all?
Would you have not made that editorial choice yourself, Queenie?
No, I would have gone straight into Labour.
I genuinely thought you were going to say I would have gone straight into the goodbyes.
Is this the first time I've hosted?
No, you kicked up a massive fuss about it before, so okay, that's why it's burned into my brain.
Jack, how are you in America?
I've been good. We had our second episode of Have I Got News For You US, which we're doing out here in New York. And obviously, both episodes are now on BBC iPlayer to watch.
Ooh.
It kind of feels like the first episode was great, and I think the second episode is even better. I've been impressed. It's like, we talked about it before, but like Jimmy Mulville, who's the head of Hat Trick, has talked a little bit in the press about this relationship that Angus Dayton and Paul and Ian had. It's almost like a sitcom style. Mm. And in this second episode, you're sort of seeing that even more so between the three of our regulars.
Who were the guests this week?
So we had a comedian called Rosebud Baker. It was brilliant. We talked about IVF and she also has had IVF, so that was really cool to kind of hear from her side of things. Very, very funny. Yeah. And we had a former US politician called Charlie Dent, who was brilliant in the kind of non-comic role because he was just really game and up for getting involved.
All the politicians in the UK will know what the show is and what they're going in for. It must be kind of weird for the politicians there to go on it not quite knowing.
That's why quite a lot of them say no. So it's probably good for the US version not to...
Yeah, that's true.
Mike, have we had any memorable politicians saying no?
I remember there being a great one from Steve Baker saying, "Don't ever email me again." I think that got printed out and put on the wall for a while.
Oh.
That was a really good one.
John Major would always write a letter back, wouldn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he'd write a really, he's a classy guy.
I like that.
I think with John Major and royals, I think I once wrote to Prince Charles when he was Prince Charles to ask him to come on the show and you had to write to him. And I think we got a written response back from him. Yeah, and from John Major. I like there's always a polite decline. You're just thinking they were probably like, absolutely not.
Do we ever hear back from Obama? Because I know we definitely would every year be like, we might as well just send something.
This is what I love about Americans. When you email British people, the agents are generally like, yes or no. Or sometimes they're just like, absolutely not. And the Americans are always so polite. I remember emailing about Michelle Obama and then replying going, thank you so much for inviting Michelle. She's so touched and honored that you would have, as if she like tunes in every week.
As if she's even been told about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where was her agent as well? From Northern Ireland? Is that what you...
I thought that was a good accent.
We've also been prepping for the run through for this series.
Oh, fun. When is it?
It's tomorrow.
And so what is the run through? What does that involve?
The run through is where we do a mock setup of the show. So at the Hat Trick office, we'll invite new comedians and new journalists. Let's see how they get on with like a fake showing of the show. So us, the researchers and APs, and Mike, I guess he does something.
I try not to.
We'll get together and in like a run through of the show of this week of news.
It's a nice way for comics and journalists to see how the show works because it's quite different from other panel shows.
It's a good way to try and bring new people onto the show and get different voices and stuff. So it's quite fun. So we're doing that tomorrow. We're filming a trail for the new series on Thursday.
Oh, nice.
I won't give too much away. But
but it's going to be electric.
Nice. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
It's also the last podcast because we're returning everyone's screens next week. So thank God.
I think we're coming back for an American election special.
Oh,
in November. So you'll still be out there, Jack, won't you?
I will be, yeah.
You can be our man on the ground with the mic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for the final time this series, shall we dive into round one?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Great. The big talking point this week is the Labour conference happening in Liverpool. How did we feel about Keir Starmer's speech this afternoon?
Oh, Jack, I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh, this is incredible.
Like I say, essentially, the Labour conference has been all over the news. It's been wall-to-wall coverage.
Well, I mean, this might actually cut through.
All I saw was a little thing to say that he potentially got a little bit interrupted.
So. He did. There was an interruption.
A couple heckles.
But the real talking point is, this is quite unfortunate, when he was talking about Gaza, and he was calling for the return of hostages, he accidentally said the return of sausages.
Plain as day. Yeah. It was so funny.
Wait, he said...
He said, I call again for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, the return of the sausages... Oh, the hostages.
Jack's put his hand over his mouth.
No way.
The return of the sausages. Of hostages.
Okay, you should have done this, Mike.
Oh, yeah, any excuse to do the voice.
And he didn't just leave the stage. He kept going.
It was early on.
Well, good job. The main thing is he didn't mess up the wording on too contentious an issue. So that's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not like it's the most serious thing going on at the moment.
My theory is this is like a real conspiracy theory, like 911lizards.com, that he's actually a huge fan of the show. He knows we're coming back next week,
right.
And he wanted to give us an opening to bring up our favourite clip. Because if he's talking about the return of sausages, I'm sure he's referring to going to Beijing to open up new pork markets.
It's his pork markets, isn't it?
I don't think it's a conspiracy, Mike. I think it's just a ham-fisted mistake.
Oh,
well done.
That was a banger.
And that's the main takeaway from the whole speech. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, that was the main takeaway. I mean, it was quite a terrible... Not a terrible speech. It was quite a dull speech.
No, it was
terrible.
I think it was terrible. I implore you to Google, if you have time, The Dog of Wisdom, which I've shared around this office many a time, where a dog kind of goes, hop up, bodaga. And that is what Keir Starmer sounds like. So you could play that in replacement of this speech. But it was interesting that both him and Rachel Reeves got heckled this time, and he thought he had a really nice jibe in there by going, this guy's obviously got a pass from the 2019 conference, when the heckler was shouting about children in Gaza.
My big takeaway from that was that it was so clearly prepared. Like, he so clearly had a line, and he was so pleased to get to use it. It was quite odd him laughing and giggling and doing this line while, like, sort of his burly security, like, dragged away a 14-year-old in a headlock.
Was there any glitter involved? Or not?
Not this time.
No, he wasn't there.
The man who threw the glitter wasn't there. That's what Mike's trying to say.
Yeah. That's exactly what I meant. Keir Starmer, it was quite weird, the opening to his speech. He was like, he was just too excited to be up there. So he couldn't get past the first line for ages. So he kept saying thank you. Because you can download this speech. You can see it. It's like on the Labour website, and they release it to the press. So they know what he's going to say.
So you can print it out and get it framed at home.
Exactly. Like I've already done. Put it next to my Steve Baker, don't ever email me again email.
But he said,
at the beginning, he said, thank you, conference, which he said a lot. He came on stage. He said, thank you, 14 times. I counted it.
You went back and counted.
I went back and counted. He said, thank you, 14 times. I just think he had a lot of donors to thank for all the freebies.
I did see this, that there was a word cloud that came out today. Mm. 2,000 people getting asked what they thought of Keir Starmer, and the big word just being liar in the middle, which I thought was quite strong. But I also quite liked that above it they had like positive words which were strong and good, but it just looks like it's saying strong, good, liar, which is quite nice.
One of my favourites, which was tiny and on the outskirts as if it'd been pushed out, was tosser.
I mean, it's not been great. It was the opportunity to sort of have a bit of a reset because I've had a terrible couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And on the Monday, they were supposed to have a vote on the winter fuel allowance, which the government were clearly going to leave because everyone thinks it's a terrible idea to take away pensioners' fuel. But what they've done is they've postponed the vote. So they've obviously come down heavy on them, Starmer and the Labour leadership. So they're holding the vote. Obviously, we're recording this on Tuesday. They're holding the vote on the Wednesday. So, like, Starmer's already on the train back to London.
Yeah.
And people are really angry about it. I think Labour delegates are angry about it. So you just think it's another sort of unnecessary own goal.
I thought The Guardian was a bit on the nose where they said that the winter fuel allowance had got the graveyard slot. which, you know, you kind of think, okay, let's maybe steer clear of that.
But accurate.
Yvette Cooper said, for 15 years we said things but couldn't do them. But now this Labour government will, can you complete the sentence for me?
We'll also say things that we can't do.
We'll say different things that we can't do. Well, that's how we're different from the Tories.
We'll do things we can't say.
The Daily Mail were moaning about Angela Rayner's photographer.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
The sort of question you'd ask is, what can you get for £66,000 a year? And it turns out someone's to take your photograph all the time, which is quite nice, isn't it?
Not just any photo, as the Mail pointed out, which they were seem really upset about. One of the main photos is a picture of her drinking whiskey through a straw.
Oh, God, really?
And they went in hard on that. I mean, but I would point out it's taxpayer money.
This worries me because I feel bad for you, Queenie. If they get rid of this photographer, it's going to make your job a lot harder.
That's true.
You're going to have a lot fewer silly pictures of Angela Rayner.
I would actually pay to have someone follow Angela Rayner around 24/7. I would be able to do my job in about an hour, I think.
You can be the single taxpayer that's funding it.
Yeah.
My favourite thing about the kind of excuse that Labour came up with it was they were like, actually, we're going to get photos from all round the department, not just Angela Rayner. And you think, who else are they going to take photos of in the department? Like, the other civil servants just get on with their job. They're not going to take a photo to then put out in some kind of PR thing.
Yeah.
Like Tom, who works in accounts, right, he's just sat by the photocopier and they're like, Tom, do you want to get a couple of photos of you faxing something over to someone? Because we have to kind of do it to justify this bloke being here for £66,000 a year.
Here's Steve trying to balance the books and work out who in the department needs to be fired. And here's a picture of Angela Rayner in Ibiza.
Yeah.
Having it large. They've actually called it a vanity photographer as well.
Yeah.
Really?
That came from Labour themselves, right? Because they were talking about it being a vanity photographer when Boris got it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Angela Rayner was one of the most vocal people to criticise him in 2001 for having a vanity photographer.
Yeah.
It's not great.
This is fun.
Liz Truss turning up and being like, my mini budget, it absolutely rocked and it would have been the best. It feels like it's going to become an annual political thing. Like Ed Balls Day is a thing, right? We all celebrate the day that Ed Balls put his own name into Twitter because he was obviously searching for it and put it as a status. Her popping up again this week to be like, you know what you could have had, guys? I just love the idea that's going to happen every single year now.
And really all she's doing is reminding us that she did the mini budget.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
She said Britain would be a very different place if we'd get the mini budget. And I just thought, no fucking shit.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Welcome back to In the News This Week. It's round two now, where we bring a news item from the past week that we think would be perfect for round two of the TV show. But before we start, Emerald, I believe you have an update on a previous story for us.
I do. I have an update on the Villa V Odyssey cruise that I mentioned in a previous episode.
I was going to bring this up as well. It's exciting.
It's quite a happy ending to the tale. So this is the cruise that has been delayed for months in Belfast, not travelling anywhere. And some of the passengers decided to stay in Belfast. For two of the passengers, this was very fortuitous because Gian Peroni and Angela Harsanyi have met in Belfast. They didn't know each other beforehand. They both had separate cabins on this cruise and they're now engaged. He proposed to her. They apparently spent a lot of time walking around Belfast, got to know each other, and they've got engaged. And the other passengers only found out about it because the guy quietly exited a WhatsApp group that had been set up for single travellers on the cruise. And so everyone noticed that he wasn't single anymore.
It's absolutely Stockholm syndrome, isn't it?
It does feel that way, yeah.
That wasn't actually my update. My update was going to be that the captain, the cat, is dead. But
are you joking?
Yeah, I'm joking.
I just really hope they push the boat out for their wedding. That's all I can say.
Nice. Okay.
Emerald, since you have the floor, would you like to take us through your round two story?
Yes. Although controversially, I've got an odd one out round instead of a round two.
Oh my God.
And it's also animal themed, so...
They're all dead except for Captain the Cat. They've all been run over.
Not quite. So the four pictures are a capybara called Cinnamon, two unnamed squirrels, a blue Mormon butterfly and a common Jezebel butterfly, and a pair of pigs from British Columbia. So what do you think is the odd one out and why?
So I would eat three of them.
Is it they've all got engaged in Belfast? I think I know two of the stories, but I don't know the connection.
Ooh.
The pigs escaped, the ones in British Columbia, and they couldn't get caught by police. I saw that this week.
Ooh.
Is it something to do about escaped animals?
Yes, you're on the right lines. What they have in common is that three of them recently took themselves to places where they shouldn't have gone, apart from the butterflies who were stolen and taken somewhere. Whoa. They shouldn't have gone.
Okay.
It's not necessarily the best one, but I found four animal stories. So I thought
that's really, that's genuinely really impressive.
Stealing butterflies sounds like quite a Victorian crime. What are people doing nowadays?
Yeah. Well, so they did it with butterfly nets and wax to kind of trap the butterflies. But it's an Italian father and his son. They've been fined £150,000 in Sri Lankan rupees for trying to smuggle them out of a Sri Lankan safari park. And they stole something like 300 insects from this park. And the weird thing is that the father is a surgeon and his friends say he's an insect enthusiast. And they've said that the butterflies don't have any commercial value. So he was just doing it because he loves butterflies.
For love of the game.
Yes.
I think this is incredible because catching a butterfly or two is not a surreptitious crime. I'm imagining them flailing nets about in the middle of a safari park, being like, oh, got to be sneaky about this.
No, it's cartoonish.
You're like having to sneak the net down in your trousers, like walk your leg along as you go in.
So yeah, the butterflies are the odd one out because they were stolen. Cinnamon and the capybara made a daring breakout from a Shropshire zoo called Who Zoo and Dinosaur World. They had a huge search operation that had 20 people and a thermal drone. And in the end, she was found just 250 metres from her paddock.
I actually, so this is really interesting. I think I listened to an interview with the owner of Cinnamon the Capybara on Radio 4.
Is that interesting, Mike?
Do you know what? Do you know what? Genuinely, it was a terrible interview. It really made me laugh. Like they said, oh, we heard there was like a manhunt and there was like a thermal drone. And it was like, yep. Yeah. That was really, so tell us about this manhunt. She went, oh, well, I just walked out into the forest a little bit and there's a pond and I know they like ponds and I went there and sure enough, she was there. Just took all sense of any drama or interest out of it. It was really good.
And Jack was right about the pigs. There were a pair of pigs that went on the loose in British Columbia and they were chased around this field while a school of elementary school students watched and cheered. So, and they were caught by the owner of Star's Piggly Wiggly Sanctuary, but she said that the school students were clearly on the side of the pigs and that they were cheering go piggy go as she chased them.
They've gone down straight to Piggy Wiggy Abattoir now, I think.
You beat me to it, Mike, because I said for the next steps of the pigs' care, they then were driven away from the school, presumably because they don't want the kids to know how the sausage gets made.
Sorry.
Well, Keir Starmer can tell you how the sausage gets made.
That's true. Mm. And finally, the squirrels. A train to Gatwick was cancelled because two squirrels boarded it and refused to leave. They jumped on and they forced other passengers to flee from the carriage.
How?
Playing music loudly on their phones.
And manspreading.
Staff tried to get them off with snacks and then brooms, but to no avail, and then they cancelled the whole journey. And I actually, none of us need to write any jokes for this because Great Western Railway have done it for us. They said, the squirrels boarded without tickets, breaching railway by clause, and the cancellation was the end of a nutty tale.
Now that's what makes me want to walk into the sea, when I have train operators trying to make jokes about stuff. I think, okay, lads. No.
Hey, they've gotten their raise. They're allowed to experiment a little bit.
Nah, loads of people have been delayed because of squirrels and you're making jokes about trying to get them off with snacks. Nah. No, thanks. Someone paid like thousands of pounds for a season ticket and they can't get on it because it's bloody squirrels. I'd be absolutely fuming if I was them. If I read that and that was the response and I didn't instantly get some kind of refund.
How has this turned into a talk radio?
I don't know. I've absolutely.
Yeah, Jack's calling into
I've
LBC.
Got full
wow.
LBC.
Jack's been watching a lot of Fox News in America.
Yeah. Listen, you're an angry man, Jack.
They're informative. It's good.
I can imagine Trump jumped in and goes, the squirrels are boarding the trains. They're not leaving. They're not leaving these squirrels.
He did say yesterday that London is absolutely in a state of disarray because of immigrants. So he must have been talking about grey squirrels, which are notoriously not native.
Did he actually say that about London?
He did, yeah. He said London and Paris is in a state.
Yeah. Well, do you know what, mate? We'll be very happy for you to never visit again. I'm sorry, that was to Jack and Trump.
I was going to say, you talked to me. Yeah, thanks, mate.
Cheers, Emerald. That was great. Jack, what would you like to talk about?
So my story is also animal related, but basically there's an island on Alaska that has urged all its residents to try and help find a possible rat. One person said they thought they saw a rat and they just went hell for leather, because the actual island itself is called St. Paul Island, right? It's referred to as a Galapagos of the North, and it's got 350 residents. And essentially, if you get rats on this island, it completely messes up the wildlife and all this sort of stuff. So like, there's this huge operation to try and find a potentially non-existent rat. They have blocks of wax to see if like rats have chewed it. And some of them are like ultraviolet, so that if they eat it, they can then go and like use black lights to find their droppings. And they've been using peanut butter to try and get it. Essentially, the reason being because to get rid of rats once they're on there is really expensive and takes a lot of time. So they're like so paranoid about rats getting onto this island. But it's got 350 people on that island, and clearly they just have nothing to do.
Yeah.
Because like, I get it. You want your island to be nice. You don't want rats. But if you're all looking for one potential rat, it does make you think.
To be fair, if you lived in Alaska, you would be like, oh, thank God we've got something to do. It's a rat hunt.
Yeah. I just think maybe instead of like getting these big blocks of wax, just send them a puzzle or something, you know, a couple of cards to play. You know, I get it. It's an island, so ball games, it's going to go off a cliff. That's fine. Don't do that.
I think they should televise it and it could take the traitor's slot when that next comes around.
Yeah, it's a good format.
Yeah, find the rat.
I feel like I've been slightly on a rat thing, being in New York.
God, well, since you saw your rat being sick.
Oh, no, that was a pigeon eating sick. But like the New York mayor, we covered it, I think, in the first episode where he was introducing bins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he was going to have a rat conference, which was last week. And he had his rat conference, but it was sort of semi-overshadowed by the fact that he has several federal investigations going on around him and his team. So the whole rat thing has become a bit of a thing on the side.
Turns out he's the rat.
We don't know yet.
Yeah.
You talk about rats quite a lot in New York. You see them a lot. They're a thing.
Aren't they like the size of children?
I've adopted a couple, actually. I've got a few offspring now.
I think we've seen Jack's full transition to New Yorker, because at first he was talking about his shock at deodorant prices and hummus. And now rats is his only topic of conversation.
Yeah. Also, if you talk to any New Yorker, just bring up Pizza Rat and they'll talk to you for like 10 minutes about Pizza Rat.
I do not want to talk to any New Yorkers, so I won't be doing that. But that's really good advice.
Pizza Rat, is this like Brat Summer?
No.
Is this like a cultural thing that's just bypassed me? Are you Pizza Rat?
No, Pizza Rat was in 2015 where someone just filmed a rat taking a pizza slice up some steps. And the US became obsessed with it, basically.
I think New York as a society, if that's what entertains them, I don't think you or them should be throwing shade on Alaskans if that's what passes for entertainment in New York.
Very true.
Thank you for that story, Jack. Mike, you're up.
My story involves two of my favourite things, alcohol and the Daily Mail being angry. So this is...
It's quite dark.
Yeah, it does sound darker than it actually is. I didn't really think that through when I said that. So health experts want us to shrink pints of beer in the UK, as they've worked out it will make people drink less. So this is researchers at the University of Cambridge, or as the Daily Mail call them, woke scientists. So they've basically worked out if we were to switch to 2/3 of a pint instead of pints, people would drink 10% less alcohol, and a huge knock-on effect to the health benefits and a huge knock-on effect to the NHS, because they're saying in a few years' time they're projecting that 60% of NHS-related illnesses will be because of alcohol or alcoholism. But then there's also the other side of the coin, which is...
You'll be a loser with no friends.
Yeah.
This is genuinely the one British story that I did see. There was enough anger that I actually made it this way.
What's quite funny is that they've already done some research. They've already done like a little test across some pubs, So they approached 1,700 venues. Do you know how many of them they persuaded to take up the challenge and get rid of pint glasses?
I mean, like...
None.
Yeah, so few, because they just lose money, right?
Well, 1,700, 13.
13, yeah.
Although one was excluded from the results because they found out it continued to sell pints.
Oh, no.
Another downside to it is they realised that the pubs then make something like 10% less money.
They didn't think about it all the way through, did they?
No. No.
Is this going to come into effect with the no smoking in pub gardens thing? Because they're really trying to kill the one thing that we have left.
Well, yeah, there was a Telegraph headline which said, left-wing prigs want to ban the pint. We can't let them win. And I feel like there's a whole group of people uniting against this. But what's funny is this, at the moment, isn't anything to do with Labour. But everyone's just, because they're so angry about the banning smoking.
That's like rule number one of government.
Yeah.
Is keep the pubs the same. And then most of the problems will be fine.
I've got to say, like, if you're going to tell people, hey, guys, everything's going to be a little bit shit for a while and it might even get shitter. Also, we might tax you more. Also, forget about going to see a doctor. Did I mention, by the way, the two things that might bring you joy in your bleak life, smoking in a pub garden and drinking pints? We're reconsidering them as well.
We'll just have to import more rats so that we can have fun like New Yorkers do. That's the only solution.
Oh, God, we can't get rid of pints if that's the solution.
I feel like pints... cigarettes, and if they banned Greggs, I think people would lose their minds.
Yeah.
And rightly so.
Who else has jumped to the defence of pubs? Who's trying to position themselves as the...
I'm guessing...
the voice of reason.
Farage?
Sort of Farage-like. Priti Patel. She released a video. I watched it, and we'd probably place in, if we were doing the show. She said, I'm here at the Bull in Tottenham, behind the bar, pulling pints. And my initial reaction at that point was... good for you for finding a new career, so soon. it was just a publicity stunt. She said, this freedom-hating Labour government is hell-bent on destroying Britain's pubs and hospitality sector.
Couldn't agree more.
Queenie, I suppose we've put it off for long enough. We should have you around too.
Thank you. It's very gracious. I actually have two stories that I'd like to compare very quickly.
Ooh.
They're about vigilantes in the US versus the UK. So in 2015, the board game Cards Against Humanity, I don't know if anyone knows about it, crowdfunded to buy a plot of land. The land was on a part of the site that Trump wanted to build his wall to keep Mexicans out of the US. But this week, when the Cards Against Humanity people went back to the site, they realized, oh shit, there's loads of like mechanical equipment and like it's been completely bulldozed over. They realised SpaceX had been using it as a dump, essentially.
Ah.
Just like they did with Twitter.
Get them.
Zoom.
And so they put out quite a funny statement that went quite viral on Twitter, ironically, which is 150,000 people paid us to protect a pristine parcel of land on US-Mexico border from racist billionaire Donald Trump's very stupid wall. Unfortunately, an even richer, more racist billionaire, Elon Musk, snuck up on us from behind and completely fucked that land with gravel, tractors, and space garbage. After we caught him, SpaceX gave us a 12-hour ultimatum to accept a lowball offer for less than half our land's value. We said, go fuck yourself, Elon Musk. We'll see you in court. They also added on to the end that they'll take the $15 million in damages or they'll take Twitter.com, either or, whichever one they want.
So I think we should just clarify. So Cards Against Humanity, if anyone hasn't played it, is a game where you take two cards with completely different meanings and subjects and you smash them together to make the most offensive sentence you can think of.
Yeah.
And if that's not the most Elon Musk thing ever, I don't know what. He's basically walking Cards Against Humanity.
Every one of his tweets you could probably pick out and be like, oh, that was in this pack, that was in this pack.
I genuinely thought you were going to say they were suing him because Elon Musk was basically stealing their idea by just being himself.
And also similarly only funny to teenage boys. So
And like millennials.
Sorry.
Queenie, know your audience.
It's kind of ironic
that they're annoying Trump and Musk with this stunt because the most annoying people on the planet play this game, who are millennial.
Queenie's going to war on the last episode.
Yeah. I've just been waiting for an excuse. The story that I wanted to compare this to is the UK's version of a vigilante, bearing in mind that this other one was a big company suing for millions of dollars with some of the most powerful men in the world. And we have the pothole vigilante.
I knew it was going to be potholes.
Planting flowers to shame the council into fixing roads, which I think is more gallant. I'm really into this guy.
Yeah.
So a vigilante gardener called Harry has planted flowers in potholes to shame his local council. He's just said, I am shaming them and I've got no shame in shaming them because they should be doing something about it. It's not illegal to plant flowers in the road. And apparently, after he's planted the flowers, the council's just paved them over because the flowers are there. And that's somehow like a road safety thing. So he's killing it.
Because they could puncture a tyre.
Yeah.
Planting cactuses.
I was drawn to this story because one of our favourite people started filling in potholes in his own community, which is Rod Stewart. We have a channel on our Slack, which is like a work WhatsApp, called Rod Watch, where I would like either Jack or Mike to explain the origins of this because I don't actually know what it is, but it's just fun and we keep track of what Rod Stewart's doing.
Well, when we looked through the papers, we found that there was an unbelievable amount of Rod Stewart in the papers. Like, yeah. Whoever his press person is so good because they'll just, almost every other day, if not every day, there's a small story about Rod wears this cool blazer or his Rod out on the street.
Or his Rod on holiday with his family. That's one I like.
Rod Stewart heading over to Alaska to help hunt rat.
The wall of Rod, which was when we had physical papers and we'd cut them out and we'd stick them on the wall, but they had to get taken down because another company was setting up in the office and they didn't want all these Rod
Why would they
Stewart.
Not want that?
I think it was actually the structural integrity. There was so much Rod on the wall. It was a supporting wall and Rod was going to bring down the wall, like a bit like Berlin. We have to give a shout out to Danny Carr here, former producer and series producer of Have I Got an ECA, who I think made the Rod connection and even in one of his last series handed out Rod Stewart calendars to all the team at the end of the series.
Aww. That's great.
That's passed on through the generations and I'm really enjoying Rod Watch.
Do you remember we had a cardboard cutout of Rod? A life-size one. He came to my wedding.
Okay, it's time for a winner. Jack, which story do you think should win this week?
I would say I did really like Mike's story. I was a fan of Mike's story. I think Emerald, I liked the amount of connections you had, but I was a fan of Mike's, I'm afraid. It feels like a very Have I Got News For You style story.
I'm really torn. On one hand, I want to give it to Emerald because it's so hard to come up with another one out. On the other hand, and the opportunity to talk about Rod in the news. I'm going to give it to Emerald for my vote.
Good choice. I would have felt bad about that because I'm also going to choose Emerald.
Wow. Yeah.
It's so difficult to come up with those and we've done all of them. They've been done, so that's great.
That's true.
Yeah.
Emerald, who would you like to pick?
I think I'm leaving us in a happy position because I'm picking Mike's. I just think the beer chat is going to be good. The fact that only, 13 took up the offer and then didn't even do it. It's just funny.
And it's sort of the outrage as well. I always love
There'll be a lot of outrage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's a draw. Me and Mike.
Hey, series winners. That's how it works, right?
Yeah, and me and Jack are the cool guys.
I've actually never won a round two story.
Have you never?
But you've hosted, haven't you?
The first episode, but that was by default.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Jack.
So that's fine, guys. Don't worry about it.
I'm really glad about that.
I've just been holding on to it the whole time.
Jack, if it makes you any better, I just say it's a good incentive to work hard on next series and come up with that.
Yeah, that's what it is. Listen, I need to work on myself. I need to work on my critical eye. I actually don't know if that's true. I might have won one of them. I think I might have won one of the first one.
Yeah.
I reckon I probably did. Yeah.
Fake news.
That also makes me look like I'm really bitter about it now, which I'm not. I don't care. Whatever, guys. Whatever.
Sure. Thanks for listening to In the News this week.
For updates on the show, make sure you're following Have I Got News For You on Instagram, TikTok and X, formerly known as Twitter.
You can also get in touch with us there using the hashtag HignifiPod or emailing podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with two T's.
Make sure you're followed and subscribed to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now, and we'll see you here for a special one-off episode in November before we return again for another series in the new year, which is exciting. So say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
In the News This Week is presented by Jack Harris, Queenie Miller, Emerald Paston, and Mike Raymond. The producer is Diggory Waite. The engineer is John Wakefield. The executive producer is Claire Broughton. And the music is by Big George. In the News This Week is a Hattrick podcast. Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs. Listen and subscribe to The Real Sex Education, wherever you get your podcasts.